Yeah, hi there. Today I'm here with Michael Matinka. He's a software developer originally from Slovakia, and he's working with Python and the cloud. Hi, Mike, Michael, how's it going?
Hey, hi, Bas. Very good, thank you. How are you?
Thank you. So tell us a little bit about what you're working on currently.
Well, currently I'm working on the basically big ordering system for media in the air, which basically runs completely serverless on AWS, and it's the whole backend is done in Python, and the front end we use well, TypeScript and React. That's
Oh
in a
wow, okay.
short.
How many people are on your team?
Not many, to be honest. I think we are three. Well, now we are four, I think. So we started when I joined, I was the fourth, but then one guy left, and then I joined, and then recently we hired another person. So we are just four in the core team. And then we use
Okay, so
it's a complicated structure in the because we have also like sister business which does some other things, but essentially my own team is four people at this point of developers.
I've got it. Okay, but that's still like a large enough team size to justify like microservices, serverless architectures, and so on. Is it, or do you know that your company started right away with serverless, or is that something that was basically the result of a refactoring?
It was both. So I didn't really ask that much about the past, but when I joined, basically it was already using serverless because it was using some lambdas and step function on AWS, but there was still a big chunk of the system was still done in Django.
Oh,
And
okay.
while I
So,
was there, we moved completely to serverless. So at this point, there is no Django, there is no even relational database, no Postgres anymore. Now we are purely lambdas, step functions, Upsync, Cognito, basically pretty much fully serverless.
okay, that's interesting. Like, what is your personal feeling about that? Do you like it? Is that a structure that you would pick for your own projects as well, or is it more hype than anything?
Well, it really depends like on what we need to do and how you want to structure your software. It has it's not a silver bullet, so I don't like the hype about serverless because it is not true that it solves everything for you and then you don't need to manage anything. Usually with the whole any software you are talking about or any technologies, usually you have always some problems and then you can choose to exchange your current problems for different set of problems. And
Yeah,
the
like always, yeah.
So the serverless solves bunch of problems for you, but then you have other problems you need to solve. So you really need to evaluate your own case, what it gives you and what it takes you, basically, I would say.
Okay, what do you think are the areas where serverless shines? What is the app that one should build on serverless structures?
Well, what serverless really gives you is like scaling. So you don't really need to care about scaling that much. Like if you have, one Django app, obviously you can scale that. You can always get bigger VMs and bit more memory and so on. But serverless makes this, I think, easier. That's great. What it takes you is somehow, for example, the testing is harder. Because if you have a monolithic application, it's kind of easier to test because it's also easier to like use whatever function from everywhere you want. Which is fine. But again, if you do that, suddenly everything is connected to everything, and then when you actually need to split stuff, you figure out that, oh, now actually, I cannot move this part of the system somewhere else because I need to scale it because it imports this function and that function and other function from all these other modules. So what serverless gives you from the start is the separation of concerns, because suddenly you have a code in one Lambda and code in other Lambda, and you just cannot like just import a function from another Lambda into your new Lambda, right? So then you need to kind of think
Exactly.
about where to put what and what things are connected to other things. So it kind of forces you to maybe think about the interconnections within the system right from the beginning, which is either bad or good, depending whether you just need to move fast at the beginning or you want to get it kind of more separated into modules from the beginning.
Yeah, got it. Okay, you talked about scaling. I mean, you clearly meant like scaling on a traffic from a traffic point of view, like
Or
scaling for
processing
bigger
point of
loads
view.
on the applications. But what about scaling in terms of people, like people working on the project? Is it easier or harder to scale a serverless application in a team? What do you think?
Again, some things makes it easier, some things harder. So if you get good people, who knows, who are basically more senior and knows how serverless work, I think it makes scaling of the system easier, because every time you do anything, basically you need to think like, is it new Lambda or can we put it into existing Lambda? How is this Lambda connected to other services? And you have basically strict boundaries. So that's good, but on the other hand, if new person doesn't know what he is doing, and haven't done any serverless before, it's confusing and they cannot really get easily on board, because I've seen people who just go create new Lambda and they try to import something from other part of the code base, but that code is from another Lambda and they don't know, so it doesn't work. And then the testing is problem. So yeah, again, I know I'm not really giving any marketing black and white answers, but after 22 years, I'm kind of reluctant to give those, because every time there is a, you know, it's kind of gray.
There's always a trade-off between things, yeah. Especially when you opt in for a new paradigm of working, right?
Yeah, I was also kind of when I switched to serverless, because even though I'm kind of coding in the cloud for at this point maybe 10 years, first half of it was mostly running monolith applications in the cloud, right? So, you know,
In
whether it was
containers.
ECA, yeah, in containers. So whether it was ECA, or initially it was not even containers, so it was like Ansible or whatever it was at the time. So like Ansible scripts, installing stuff on EC2s, then obviously moving to containers and ECS, and then on GCP using Cloud RAN, and so on and so on. But then when I fully switched to serverless, I also need to also had to adjust my thinking.
I think there is a lot to adjust for. Like when you initially start, let's say you have no experience and no prior exposure to serverless, you would like be a little bit overwhelmed in like how to set all of that up, because like there's more to it like than just a Lambda function, for example.
Oh yeah.
What do you think is a good way to get started with all of that?
Well, I don't feel like a good
Or how
teacher,
did you
so
start? How
well,
did you learn about
I was
all
just thrown into I was just thrown into water, so to say. So
of that? Okay.
it what I really obviously I was in tech for a long time, so I knew all the basic stuff. I had to study a lot, to be honest. So, like, you know, I read a lot of AWS documentation about whatever technology I was going to use, and they, you know, to grasp the basics, how it works, what are the limitations. Yeah, that's how I learned basically on the go. Yeah, but the good thing is the AWS documentation is quite good. But it's also quite like there is a lot, so it takes time to go
Again,
through that to understand stuff.
I mean,
So
how many services does that AWS have at the moment?
I don't know, hundreds.
Like
I don't know, but
hundreds?
yeah, I don't know whether it's
Yeah.
200 or 500, but it is,
Yeah.
yeah. It is between 100 and
It's
1,000, so.
beyond like what you usually like learn in one go, right?
I mean, a lot of them are obviously not serverless, and a lot of them are really like specialized services. So, like, there are specialized services for maybe video streaming and then machine learning and another thing. If you are talking really just 90% most common, like software or web development, obviously it's less services. But it's still a lot because, you know, those services interact between each other. So, like, Lambda is one thing, but Lambda interacts in different way with DynamoDB, different way with Upsync, different way with API Gateway, and so on and so on.
Yeah, you mentioned like you had 22 years of experience in tech. So which was the
Something like
stack
that.
that you started with?
Okay, so I started with Turbo Pascal in the high school. So
Oh,
that was not really like a job. I haven't really done anything useful. Oh, actually, that's even not correct. So the first language I was going to engineering high school. So I was supposed to be this person who, in the end, would program these digital technologies in like factories. So like I would need to program some machine to build something. So the first ever programming language, I don't even know what it was called, but it was like custom programming language developed by this company who was developing robotic arms in my hometown in
Oh
Slovakia.
yeah, it's
So I
always a
don't know
good
the
idea to
name.
invent an own programming language for just one
Because
purpose.
it was, but it was because their own hardware, obviously, and it was probably developed during, I guess communism at the time. And it just stayed as
Right.
a learning tool. But then we had the officially programming subject. So we used Turbo Pascal, the blue with the yellow font. And
I
then at
remember.
some, yeah. So and then at some point I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. And so I bought some books. So I started with HTML and JavaScript. Then moved to PHP because it was PHP 3 at that point, which was the fastest way to do something useful, I guess. Then it was at the time where I think .NET for Microsoft was in beta, or maybe it was already
It
released. I
might
don't know.
be,
It
yeah.
was around 2002 or 2003. I just read about it and it seemed cool, so I started with C Sharp. And I stayed in the .NET and Microsoft ecosystem, I think, for 8 years until 2009 or so.
Oh, wow.
2007, yeah, something like that. Yeah, so I was a like C Sharp developer and I did the server side as well as then I did the front end. So I built some Windows applications using WinForms on, and then later Avalon or whatever was the code names. Yeah, then
Oh,
I
the
switched
entire
to,
Microsoft stack.
then I switched to do be Apple developer. So I started programming iPhone apps back in 2008 or beginning 2009 when it was still new and cool.
Yeah, that
Yeah, and
was just the beginning of things.
And then I did that for like 5, 6 years, essentially, working in companies in my home country. And I also worked in Silicon Valley for I think 18 months, doing iOS applications. Then I changed jobs again and I got into Python and backend development.
Which of those did you like most?
In the end, I like Python. So, you know, I've done other like C Sharp and then I also played with Turbo Pascal. And obviously, in the meantime, I tried C, C++. I like Python the most just because it has its weaknesses, obviously. Everybody knows those.
Yeah.
But it's like, for me, it's most productive language. So, unless you are for the business applications, you know, Python for me is most productive language. And that's why I like it. Obviously, if you are building some other tools or you need more, obviously, low level language, go for it. But for business applications, which is what I built for most of my career, I like Python the most. But I really enjoyed, for example, I really enjoyed even
Yeah.
Objective C for iOS. That was fun. Like it was cool, you know, up iPhone app still, it was cool. I really enjoyed it. And then came Swift, which was like, okay, that's even better. It was very nice, but
Yeah,
I don't do
you're
that
the
anymore.
first one who I met who really enjoyed like Objective-C. Everyone was so relieved when there was Swift.
Well, I was
But
relieved
yeah,
too because
it's like,
Swift was just better. But again, maybe it was coming
yeah.
from the C sharp. I was doing a lot of like really like boring business stuff for Swiss banks or something. So then, like maybe it was not just languages, more like changing of the things you work on from like really enterprise software for Windows to now this cool iPhone apps. So maybe it was not language. Maybe that was like the thing you built, but I liked it at the time.
Yeah, interesting. So you mentioned like a lot, like Swiss banks, Silicon Valley. I guess the current company that you're with is based out of Portugal, right?
I think it's not the same. That company is in Portugal. But as I said, there are some sister company, I think, and maybe there is a stake of some US company in that company. It's like two companies doing something together. So I don't really know the exact structure. But
Okay,
yeah,
so
I
but you worked with like European companies outside the European Union with U.S. companies.
Yeah, so
Would
I'm
you say
contractor,
there
so it's not
is
like
a
I'm employed.
difference in? Okay.
So in my career I worked with Slovakia companies, where I'm from originally. I worked with UK companies, US company, and now Portugal also. So and yeah, I mean they are different. But in my eyes, they are not, for me, they were not that much different because usually it was always international team. So even when I was working for this Portugal company, there are people from Poland, Sweden, Germany, Spain, obviously Portugal. When I was in the UK company, there was also people from different countries, you know, from basically whole Europe. And when I was working in a Silicon Valley company, essentially there was, I don't think there was any US programmer, basically. There was, because it was startup started by Europeans. So there were some Germans, Belgium, people from Slovakia, from Poland. So I always work with these very international teams.
Interesting. So, I think the thing that you're also like excited to talk about is your side project, which is kind of related to what you're doing now, serverless and Python. Can you tell me what it is?
Yeah, so I'm working on this side project which is called Stelvio, and essentially what it is it's a tool which would make deploying and defining your AWS infrastructure much much easier than with the tools right now. So and not hopefully in the long term, not only AWS. As you know, we already support Cloudflare domains, and maybe we can do more with the Cloudflare, and possibly other clouds. But the idea is that when I really started to do fully serverless on AWS, I was surprised how verbose it is to actually define our infrastructure. And I'm telling this from the position of the person who was using AWS CDK, which is probably one of the best tools at this point, because it's not a lot of YAML or AHSL or like Terraform or CloudFormation, which are even more verbose. So this AWS CDK, similar to Pulumi, is actually quite good compared to the tools available just a few years ago.
Okay,
But still, I've
just let me quickly jump in. So CDK is AWS's cloud development kit, and it's basically infrastructure as code. So you define like the cloud primitive that you want to use, such as Lambda functions or DNS records, basically in configuration files. And then you can click deploy or run a command that deploys all of that to AWS.
Yes,
Is
good.
that correct?
Yes.
Oh,
The
okay.
with the little twist there that for the CDK, it actually there is a middle step, because what CDK does is it turns your in this case Python code, but they support three other languages, I think, or four. So first it takes your Python code and turns it into CloudFormation, and then it deploys CloudFormation,
Okay,
which
CloudFormation is
it's basically
like another
RoboCamera.
IAC.
Yeah.
It's another infrastructure as code tool, also from Amazon, also for
Yes.
AWS
Although
exclusively,
again,
but
I
it's
would, I would.
YAML.
Yes, and that's the thing, the where I would also argue, and I don't like that this IAC is very freely using, or very freely using of the word code, because I don't consider YAML to be code. No, no. I mean, even HTML is more code than YAML. And same for the Terraform, which nothing against Terraform, it is fantastic tool. When it became available, it was like game changer. But again, this is really a code. It's more like JSON definitions, right? Although it has some constructs for the loop and stuff. But
So we could
yeah.
call it infrastructure as text. And the whole point is, I guess, that
It's
you can
like,
check
yeah.
in your infrastructure definitions in the source code repository, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's more like infrastructure as definition, maybe, which again, huge step forward compared to maybe clicking in the console, or just using CLIs where you had just had to run commands. So the good part was that you could put it into repository, so you get a version control, and obviously it was some form of a state in that sense, right? That you could look at it and see what probably will happen if you deploy it. While if you just click the console, or if you just even like use a CLI commands, obviously then you do it once and you don't see anything. So again, huge step forward. So we went from like clicking console or just running a CLI commands into infrastructure as definition, let's say, and then move to infrastructure as code, which is CDK and Pulumi and maybe some others.
So basically then after the AWS stuff, then came Terraform, right? Which is like an independent product that's not from AWS. And it also like allows you to make those definitions for almost every cloud provider out there, including AWS, of course, but also like Azure, GCP, and all the others out there. So, but
Yeah, so
that's
I, yeah.
still YAML, right?
That's still, well, it's technically it's a JSON, or JSON with extensions. So that's HSL, HashiCorp language, which is based on JSON, as a, compared to CloudFormation, which is, I think, based on YAML. Or maybe they support JSON, I don't know, format, but
So we
usually,
came through.
CloudFormation is YAML, as far as I know, at least from what I've used and seen. That's YAML is the default, and Terraform default is HCL, which is HashiCorp language, which is based on JSON. Or, yeah, JSON.
So basically what you're saying is we came all the way from like clicking in the console or writing spaghetti bash code for CLI tools to infrastructure as definition, like as YAML, JSON, and whatnot, and HashiCorp language. And now there is like infrastructure as code in the sense that it's really a programming language. You can use Python to define the cloud resources that you want to use, right? So
Yes,
that's what
correct.
CDK does, and that's also what Pulumi does, right?
Yes. And I think also at this point Terraform has some code versions. I haven't really tried it, but I saw on the website they have some code on top of the, I guess, original Terraform. But yeah, just if someone wants to Google it. Never used, ne I've never used it.
And what am I able to do with all of that? Like, let's say I'm using Pulumi. So what can I do with Pulumi?
Well, basically everything. So that's the beauty of whether it's Pulumi, Terraform, or CDK. So obviously the Pulumi and has the advantage that it's multi-cloud. CDK is obviously only for AWS. But the best part is that you don't need to learn new syntax, new language, or new definition language. So you don't need to. It's not like you need to learn YAML, but you still need to learn like how stuff works, how you define things, and with the Pulumi or CDK, basically you can just use, well, if you are lucky and you are a developer of one of those languages they support, you don't have to basically context switch between like Python and JSON, right? So you still work within your language, which is big plus. And obviously it gives you also full capabilities of your language. So, you know, you have for loops, you have ifs, you have all the whatever your language you like in your language, you can still use everything to define your infrastructure, and it supports everything.
So basically, it's feature complete.
It is, well, yes, it is
As
feature
long.
complete. It is, yes, in this regard, it is feature complete.
Okay, and now comes Stelvio. Is it like an alternative to Pulumi or CDK, or what is it?
Yeah, so basically, Stelvio tries to do something different. So Stelvio doesn't look at the cloud and infrastructure from whether it's feature complete or not. It tries to look at the infrastructure from developer perspective, because all of these tools we discussed are, first of all, they are feature complete. So that means they support really everything, and it's hard to support everything. So a lot of their resources and focus is on supporting everything. And they also need to support everything in detail. So that means that they cannot, you know, they I'm thinking how to put this. Basically, they are not focusing on developers. They are focusing mostly on infrastructure people. So more for DevOps or really administrators or basically DevOps, right? So they allow you to do everything. But you also need to know a lot, and you also need to write a lot of code. So it's better that it's Python, for example, but you still need to write a lot of it. And you're basically still mapping one to one between cloud resources and your code, which makes it basically very verbose to do even basic stuff often.
So basically what you're saying is that let's say I just want to deploy an API, like I'm using Fast API for Python or something like that. And the cloud resources that I have to deploy are just more than, okay, here's my API. In reality, I need to check for TLS certificates. I need to check for DNS records. I need to check for API gateway, IAM permissions, and all of that stuff. So, and this is a little bit verbose. Did I get
Yes.
that right?
So, yeah. So, just even if you take fast API, so the you would need to do a lot of work to deploy even one endpoint in fast API. Let's say if you want to use Lambda, so you would need to create API gateway. You would need to create a route. You would need to create a method. Then you would need to create a Lambda. To create a Lambda, you would probably need to zip your code to get a video dependency. So first, you will need to get dependencies locally, using pip install to get your fast API, mangum, and whatever other dependencies you need. Then you would write Pulumi or CDK code to package this up. Then you would also need to write code to integrate Lambda with API gateway method. And then don't forget IAM, so permissions. So you would need to make sure that for example, your Lambda has permission to call your database on AWS and so on. So you would probably end up with more than 10 resources you will need to configure.
So at this point, I might j you might have just lost me, and I'm way off to like providers like Vercel or something, which
Yeah.
really keeps up the promise of like, here's my code, please just run it for me in the most meaningful way. Like, here's an API endpoint, here's my code, just do whatever is necessary for it. That's basically what companies like Vercel or Python Anywhere or something like that do.
Yes, so I think it's exactly like that. I have never really used those kind of companies, but I totally get why they are able to charge people 3 times, 5x prices of AWS, because they just solve all of these things we described for you. You upload your whatever zip file and they run it for you. So yeah, that's exactly, I think, their business model, that we are more expensive to run than AWS. Because usually they run on AWS and they need to make money somewhere, so obviously I'm not blaming them. That's like normal business model. And yeah, so it's like, they solve some complexities for you and you pay them. So
Okay.
and no, no surprise that people or companies are willing to pay more unless they scale big, obviously, because it really saves them a lot of time in terms of programmers' time.
Okay, got it. Like with your side project with Stelvio, like you try to do the same in a way, or like to minimize the effort it takes to get serverless infrastructure up and running.
Yeah, so the reason I've never really used any of these services is that while they solve a lot of problems for you are back to console. So you are back in clicking through some web interface to do anything. And I just, as a, being a developer for 20, 22 years, I just kind of, at this point, I don't want to do that because I know it's not a good idea. I don't like that. Because I prefer to have my infrastructure in code so I can have it in version control, so other people can look at it, so I can replicate it, and and all the benefits of the infrastructure as code, which there are many. So what I saw currently is like one trend is infrastructure as code, like CDK or Pulumi, which are great, but still very variable, still very focused on infrastructure people or DevOps, not on developers. And then you have tools which make it easy for developers, but they're again back to console, although it's much easier, but it's still the console, it's still user interface and so on to creating your infrastructure. And I don't like any of those approaches. So the Stelvio's basically, what Stelvio tries to do is be much, much simpler than Pulumi or CDK, basically as simple as Vercel or Python Anywhere. But not with the console, but with the code, with the Python code. So Stelvio's goal is to be that you can write Python code, which is relatively simple, certainly much simpler than CDK or Pulumi, and most importantly, much less of it. But still, you can deploy to AWS, so you get AWS prices, not the markup of other providers. And you still get all the benefits of infrastructure as code. And you don't have to use the console to define your infrastructure.
So basically, what it allows me is in CDK, I would have, okay, here's my fast API. Now I have to like configure 10 different AWS services. I need to write the code for those 10 services. And in Stelvio, I would just write Fast API deployed to this domain, or how's it working?
Well, in Stelvio, you would still need to write Python code to define your infrastructure, but it would be much less of it. So, for example, you can create Lambda in one line. You can just point it to your source code, and it will define your requirements in the requirements.txt file, and Stelvio will automatically get your dependencies based on the requirements file. It will automatically zip everything together and deploy to the Lambda. You can also define, for example, Dynamo table, and simply you link Dynamo table to your Lambda function, and still we will automatically in the background create all the necessary permissions. So I don't want to go into details, but Lambda role and so on and so on. So you go from maybe manually creating or talking to API also. You just create API gateway, and you do API.route, and you define your, like, for example, get and slash users, and you point it to the Lambda. So essentially, instead of writing maybe 100, 150 lines of Pulumi or AWS CDK to create 10 resources, you'll maybe end up with 30 lines of code of Python, which does a lot of this for you
Got
automatically.
it. So basically, the differentiation between developers and DevOps people, which was originally not meant to be there at all, like the whole DevOps movement was like developers should be able to provide infrastructure. But the reality is like DevOps people are doing infrastructure and developer are doing like development stuff, right? So that line
Mostly, yes.
blurs more and more.
Yeah, so I think that's like an that's a promise which never came into fruition. So yes, as you said, we don't have that many developers deploying infra. There is a lot of DevOps people who focus specifically on infrastructure. And no, usually they can do also maybe some development, but like there is usually if you are like not like very, very small company, you end up having infra people, DevOps in this case. And it's not like you don't have developers who can do both. When I joined the company in Portugal, they had these people. And then I came and I'm also able to do that. But for example, when we try to hire people, it's pretty tough to find people who are good developers and at the same time know their ways around AWS and understand infrastructure and so on. Because it is,
Yeah,
again,
that's.
it's not rocket science. Every developer can learn it if he wants. The problem is it takes a lot of time and it takes time. Like, you need to read a lot, you need to try a lot, and it's just I see it as an unnecessary because with the given better tools, I think all developers should be able to deploy infrastructure.
Okay, so basically, you could use something like Stellvio for what your company is doing already.
In the current version, no, because for example, Stellvio at this point doesn't support step function and Cognito and other things, but hopefully. Given some time, possibly yes. So that's how Stellvio started. So I was just frustrated with a lot of infrastructure work I had to do, and it's not that I was frustrated that I have to do the work. It's kind of cool, but I found a lot of it to be repetitive. I was like, here I am again, defining Lambda, defining the IAM permission, defining the role for the same Dynamo database, and so on, right? So the Stellvio was born out of frustration of doing repetitive infrastructure code again. And yeah, my hope was that one day, yeah, the company could essentially use Stellvio and it would probably slash the infrastructure code by 90%.
Oh, okay. So I love the idea. It's basically the domain knowledge of cloud providers, AWS, like encoded into real Python code so that like developers can use it to actually focus on what they are doing, on delivering value to the business in terms of their development work and just not care so much about the infrastructure because they have that as a package. It's very
Yeah.
Pythonic, by the way. It's a bit like import anti-gravity, like
Yeah.
import Stellvio.
Yeah. Yeah, ideally, yes.
For the
So, yeah.
Yeah, very cool. So where did the name come from, by the way? So it's not
Yeah, so
anti-gravity, but it's Stellvio.
it's Stellvio. So, it's kind of, it's interesting. So, the name Stelvio basically originally comes from Stelvio Pass in Italy, which is basically this very nice road in the Alps. And a lot of car enthusiasts go there to drive their cars. It's very cool and beautiful. And I also happen to have a car, which is Alfa Romeo Stelvio. So I was like,
Oh,
okay,
okay.
that's maybe something I could use because if you look at the Stelvio Pass, you see all of these curvy roads, right? And that's how I see like infrastructure development. There is like a lot of things you have to do to get to the top.
Love it.
And I
Yeah,
was like,
that's so
okay,
cool.
so I call it Stelvio because if you see those curvy roads to the top, that's a represent what you currently have to do to, you know, to get where you want with the infrastructure. And then Stelvio might be a car which helps you to get there. So in this metaphor,
Yeah.
basically, Stelvio is the library which helps you navigate faster through those curvy roads to the top of the pass or of the mountain.
To your end goal, basically.
Yeah, to your end goal, yeah. So it's kind
Yeah,
of mix
very
of those
cool.
things.
So and as of now, like the whole project is open source, right?
Yeah, it was open source from the very beginning. So as far as I made it into something you can do anything with. So the first version 0.1 I released end of January this year. And you could deploy Lambda, although it was without dependencies, and you still need to Stelvio is using Pulumi under the hood. So you still had to in the first version you still had to use Pulumi up. So it was like DynamoDB, Lambda, and API Gateway, some simpler version of API Gateway. Yeah, so it's open source. Anybody can read the code, anybody can contribute. And it always will be open source, so obviously there is no. There is a. We're
So
still using
what's your?
Apache 2 license, so.
Oh, okay. So that's very permissive, basically.
Yeah, I was like
So
thinking about MIT or Apache, and then I ask Google or ChatGPT or someone, and basically they say MIT is MIT is like maybe more permissive, but Apache is like more specific. So maybe some companies actually prefer Apache because it's explicit about some stuff. So I went with Apache, but doesn't really. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer.
Oh, okay. So what's your long-term plan for Stelvio? Like, how much time do you invest in that? When you expect it that people are using it? How many people are like following it? So what is your
Yeah,
goal
so
for
yeah,
Stelvio
so it,
for maybe the rest of the year?
it's a side project. So obviously I need to do my main work as a contractor or to support my family, but it's a side project. So, you know, some week I spend 10 hours doing it, some week I spend 20, you know, depending on the weather, depending on the how much time I can do in the evening or weekends. So I would say classic side project. But I think at this point it's getting, you know, especially with your help, it's getting also faster to new things. So now it support it, the next version will support custom domains, and as you know, there is a S3 support in the way, Dynamo indexes, and on the roadmap, which is on the GitHub, we have plans to support SNS and SQS queues. But then, well, later, basically, the focus is st to start with the serverless. So we would ideally want to support all the basic serverless services, and then moving out of serverless, so maybe to some containers and other things. But focus this year is basically support as much serverless technologies on AWS as possible, and maybe some Cloudflare, we'll see.
Interesting. So basically, the idea is like to have from all of these 200 to 500 AWS services a little fraction covered so that people are getting easy set up, like basic serverless infrastructure.
Yes, so this is my theory, which I have not proven. It's just my theory. My theory is most of the apps are what I call boring business apps. So, and my theory is that 80% of those apps probably uses 20% of AWS services, right? And you know,
Yeah, like
obviously,
always, like it's
yeah,
always
those are
those
not high numbers,
20%.
yeah. So Stelvio, obviously, I'm not un unless you know, I'm not claiming it will ever support everything on AWS. The Stelvio is focusing on the developers, so it wants to support most common cases, or most common use cases on AWS and Cloudflare or whatever other cloud, and package them in the way so it's super easy for developers to use them. So ideally they save hundreds of hours a year, because they will use Stelvio instead of more low-level infrastructure as code.
Got it. All right. So, what's the best way to find out about the project? Is it on GitHub? Does it have a website, or
Yeah, it is
where
on
do people connect?
GitHub, but essentially best simplest way is to go to stelvio.dev, and there you will see two buttons, and one is to the documentation and another one is to the GitHub repo. So I think that's the easiest.
Yeah, very cool. I hope you keep us posted about the progress.
Yeah,
That
I
sounds like a
post
very
updates.
promising project.
Yeah, thank
Yeah,
you.
very
I
cool.
post
By the
updates
way, what's
regularly.
the yeah, what's the best way to follow you on socials? Are you on Twitter, on LinkedIn, or
I'm on Twitter, which is well, like Michael without
which is
E
called X
underscore
by now,
STLV.
but
Yeah, it's called X, but not yet. But it's basically Michael underscore STLV, and also on LinkedIn, obviously.
yeah,
Hi.
very, very interesting. Thank you for sharing those insights.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good day.